From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. More fallout this week from the Helsinki conference between Presidents Trump and Putin. We go to Moscow to speak to Mark Sloboda, senior lecturer in international relations at Moscow State University. We spoke with him via Skype from Moscow Friday. Well, Mark, it's been a hell of a week. That's all I can say.
Hi, Don. It's glad to be on. It's always an honor and a pleasure to be on CPR. The weeks all just kind of run together at this point for me. I can't even differentiate them anymore. But certainly I understand the hysteria over there back in the States has kind of reached a fever pitch. I almost expect to find Russians lynched outside, you know, the White House, maybe hung on the fences of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
Yeah, you know, no kidding. I have some friends that are, you know, of Russian ancestry here whose kids have been having some problems in school for a few months now.
There's this case with Maria Butina.
Really?
So you've heard about this, right?
Yeah, she's a gun nut, basically. And
She's a gun nut. Yeah. And so let me preface off this conversation that I am not a gun nut. I don't believe in gun nutter rights. I believe in the Second Amendment in terms of a well-ordered militia. And I certainly have no problems with a licensed and registered hunting rifles for those who have the knowledge and purpose to use them, but I'm no gun nut, and certainly I oppose the infection or of the idea from the United States to Russia that has been going on for a long time.
Right.
And ironically, Maria Butina is one of these. She is a advocate for gun rights in Russia. At least in those respects, she would certainly fall into the conservative category. I consider myself a conservative socially on some things, but certainly not on this issue. Russia's murder rate is high enough the way it is. It's still quite high. Even as alcoholism goes down, the murder rate goes down, but it's taking some time. We certainly don't need to add to the homicide rate with guns. Thank you.
Right.
But that being said, all right, she is an extremely fringe political figure here in Russia. The U.S. government-backed liberal nationalist, ultra-nationalist opposition figure, Alexei Navalny. Mm-hmm. He is also a gun nut, by the way.
Really?
As well as being a xenophobe and an Islamophobe and an ultra-nationalist and a racist and a neoliberal and all these other wonderful things.
But he's like a darling of the CIA and of the United States, all the liberals in the United States and such, right?
So yeah. He has actually supported Maria Butina, which is no surprise those who live here, because there's quite a different image presented of Alexei Navalny in the West, where he's heralded as some kind of liberal anti-corruption crusader rather than an ultra-nationalist, racist, gun-nut, neoliberal, and twice-convicted fraudster.
Right.
But, you know, that's on top of that, you have the situation where because Maria Butina has been has posted some extreme political views with guns and what should be done with guns alongside the same idea of Alexei Navalny. Some of her social media posts have actually been censored in Russia.
Mm.
So she is no friend of the Russian government,
right?
Despite the way they are portraying this in the West, they're trying to say that she was in, she's close to Putin's circle, I believe was the phrase I heard,
right?
Because she evidently had a relationship that was possibly both romantic and political with a man who is an under a vice secretary at a third tier state bank,
right?
10th in line in the bank hierarchy,
right?
I mean, to say that this is close to Putin, it's like saying, I don't know, the Montana dog catcher relationship with someone, some small town, some sheriff in somewhere. It's really quite absurd.
She was going out with some guy that she knows at the bank who's not exactly a rising star at the moment, right?
Yeah, exactly. But she found much more receptive views, area for her views, not in Russia, but in the United States,
right?
Where she started associating with the NRA. And it must be said, also in the EU, where she associated with groups who are supporting gun rights there. Now, Maria Butina is this is the ironic thing about it, is the U.S. has sent legions of unfortunately, often government paid, some who are not government paid, but activists, lobbyists, however you want to find NGO employees, I think they're usually more gongos, government organized NGOs, right, over to Russia to cultivate its values. You want to call it soft power, you want to call it sharp power, that's what it is. Nowadays they call it meddling. They call it political interference in society. Maria Butina is the clearest example of Russian civil society talking to American civil society. Yeah. Now, it happens to be conservative, not international liberal civil society. And even though it is, falls in the conservative spectrum, I certainly don't support what she does. What she supports. She is quite, as well as being a gun nut, she is also quite a proponent of capitalism, and often in its neoliberal variety.
Right.
Those two often go together. But she is quite clearly not affiliated in any meaningful way with the Russian government.
Right.
And evidently she slept with some people that she was close to in the U.S., as she's pursuing gun rights issues there. Well, this isn't that strange, right?
She's a young woman in her late 20s.
Yeah, young woman. Yeah. It should be said, there's often an issue of men unduly using their influence on young women, right? Mm. The whole Me Too movement, a sex in exchange for advancement.
Right.
I would say rarely, but sometimes it does actually go the other way, where the woman is actually propositioning. Of course, both people are at fault in that situation, right?
And they're all grown-ups, too,
by the way. That's clearly what – yeah, that's – well, it's also a form of corruption, undoubtedly. Yeah. But, she has been arrested for being an unregistered agent under the Foreign Agent Registration Act. Now – I have not seen any evidence that she was in any way doing what she was doing on behalf of the Russian government. That's right. The thing. She is a gun rights individual. She is pursuing value-laden politics that happens to be cross-border. We usually only think of these things as perhaps leftist or liberal, but occasionally conservatives across borders actually have some issues in common.
Right.
This happens to be one of them.
Right. Yeah. I mean, this now, is, you don't have in Russia that I'm aware of. I mean, I don't know, but I'm surmising this, the equivalent of a gun show in a Walmart parking lot, like they do, in Texas or whatever here. She though frequents those here and would bring those to Russia. That's my read of the situation.
Yeah. This is just so absurd. Second of all, even if you did consider her a foreign agent because she just happens to be Russian, right, residing in the U.S., there are so many unregistered foreign agents from Israel, from the EU, from China. This is really so ridiculously selectively applied. I mean, you would have to open whole new prisons, federal prisons, to lock up the unregistered lobbyists.
Right.
So I think this is a key indicator of just how hysterical the situation has got there. And I hope, actually, my first reaction, you know, other than a little bit of amusement and anger, is Russia going to respond and lock up any activist, lobbyist, in Russia who is promoting liberal values, on the basis that now anyone from the United States, dealing in any kind of social issues is automatically now a spy, a meddler, a influence, an agent of influence or so on. And, it has to be said that Russia certainly doesn't like people interfering in its politics, but not to the extent of going after people like Maria Butina. But Russia hasn't responded, and I don't see that they're going to right at the moment, because they regard this as some kind of hysteria. I don't even think they feel it dignifies a response, other than that the Ford ministry is starting a hashtag campaign for freeing her, which, right, of course, I don't expect to go very far. In fact, I saw a Guardian journalist express outrage that the Ford ministry was doing this. That it was some type of war, maybe a war on Twitter, but a war. Her Twitter feed was flooded with images sending her pictures of actual wars in Yemen and Syria and Somalia, so she knows what one looks like, because she obviously doesn't know what war is, much less war between the U.S. and Russia.
Yeah, I'm looking at, meanwhile, the discussion about the so-called KGB agents, the ones who were in the state, federal security bureau, that have been indicted here, that were the subject of conversation apparently between Putin and Trump, where Putin pushes back and says, "Hey, we can arrange for you to interview them here. By the way, there's a whole lot of folks we would probably want to talk to of yours over there, like people who were playing around in Ukraine, like people who played around in here during the 90s, like that guy who walked off with all the billions of dollars from here, and like your ex-ambassador here in Moscow." And that's kind of an interesting revelation, really, that, hey, this might have some balance to contextualize it.
Yeah, this is interesting. First of all, Bloomberg put out a piece, I think it's also been talked about elsewhere, that I guess is some type of leak from within the White House, that Trump specifically wanted and issued an order for these indictments to go out before the summit, because he thought that they would provide leverage for him against Putin.
Really?
Read it for yourself. I'm not entirely convinced by it, but it certainly is possible. It certainly didn't have the desired effect, I would guess, if that was the intent.
But he did make that claim going into the thing anyway. I mean, he said, "Hey, look, all this does is give me more leverage." He said that before the summit.
Now, I first of all, Donald Trump's performance during the summit, the argument here is that it is no big success for Putin. I know that's the argument being presented in the West, that Putin won, were humiliated, that this is some great victory for Putin, showing that we've completely lost our sovereignty and our president is a Manchurian candidate. What does he have on Trump and so on? Well, that's not the way it's being played here. The way it's being played here is that Donald Trump's performance, even if he was trying to improve relations with Russia, was so incoherent, so unhinged, going off into insecure rants about justifying, his electoral victory and the electoral college and so on, that it was really quite humiliating. I can't imagine, Putin, it's hard, of course, to judge the man. Was he secretly thrilled at this chaos and the weakness of the American president, or did he just feel a little bit of pity? I honestly don't know. But the idea here is that even if Trump wants to improve relations, he's got such domestic problems at home, however much of a witch hunt it is, it can't be ignored, that he seriously can't do anything with Russia. In fact, maybe, you know, most likely because of the pressure on him because of this situation and those around him. I mean, by any demonstrable measure, he has had a far worse relationship with Russia other than the rhetoric than Obama did. I mean, he's bombed Syria directly several times, including bases where Russian troops were.
That's right.
He has killed Russian security contractors. The only real question is exactly how many and under what the exact circumstances were. But evidently, he was quite proud and bragging about that. He's threatened to sanction Germany if they complete a planned Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline with Russia. He's leveled sanctions. He's kicked out far more diplomats over this Skripal affair with absolutely no evidence whatsoever, simply as a show of bloc solidarity with what the United Kingdom government has claimed, again, without any evidence whatsoever. And you could go on and on with this. By any objective measurement, his government has been far more conflictual, far more punitive with Russia other than the rhetoric. That is a noticeable distinction. And again, I don't know if this is Trump or if this is the people around him and the political pressure pushing him, but you know, it's a reality, and certainly it is felt that way here. And the end question is, was this summit, will it actually end up hurting U.S.-Russia relations rather than helping them because of the situation that Trump finds himself in politically with political opponents at home and this whole hysteria and witch hunt against him? So it is not being celebrated here. And when it comes to these indictments and Russia's response to it, and a lot of people don't understand that, and it's certainly not being reported this way in the Western press. When Putin suggested to Trump that, again, this supposedly happened behind closed doors, and we don't know exactly what was said there. There was only two interpreters in the room, one for each of them. The conversation went on for about 2 hours. But evidently, at least part of it, Putin requested that, he suggested that perhaps he could allow the U.S. to interview the GRU agents, you know, the Russian version of the Defense Intelligence Agency, that are for some odd reason claimed to have been involved in this political party hacking, with the Democratic Party servers and exposing that Hillary Clinton rigged the Democratic Party primary. Right. Something that, of course, is completely neglected. Oh, they hacked us. They hacked us. No one ever wants to look at the substance of what the supposed hack that WikiLeaks presented on this, because, that you might actually call that democratization then. And I think entirely accurately, if whoever was responsible, be it a whistleblower through WikiLeaks or Russia or someone else. But Putin's suggestion that you could interview these GRU agents that you're making these allegations against, if you allowed us to interview Bill Browder, this corrupt businessman who made off with extremely large sums of Russian money through various illegal tax schemes and corruption, and then evidently, at least according to Putin, in a roundabout way, transferred this money to Hillary Clinton's campaign. I haven't seen any reporting on any confirmation or veracity of that claim, but I doubt that he would bring it up at such a format unless there was some type of substance to it, at the least. But I haven't seen any investigation of that in the Western media whatsoever, but also of several NSA, national security agents, the ones who actually do the hacking and the spying online for the U.S. government, the former U.S. ambassador under Obama to Russia, Michael McFaul, who called himself a color revolution expert, and he's the person that when he came to Russia as the ambassador, before he even presented his credentials to Putin as ambassador to the Russian government, he was meeting with fringe liberal opposition figures in the embassy. He invited them to the embassy before. I mean, if that's not a clear intention of what you intend to do while you're there. And he ran, what he did while he was here is exactly the type of political destabilizing interference, meddling that the U.S. resistance is now perhaps hypocritically, perhaps a bit of psychological projection, accusing Russia of doing. So that's specifically why Putin made this idea. It's not being reported as a quid pro quo at all, just that he wanted to interrogate them. But this is Russia's response to the U.S. request for the transfer of these GRU agents to the United States when there is no extradition treaty between the U.S. and Russia, and it is the U.S. that has repeatedly refused to sign one with Russia, because Russia, there's quite a few Chechen warlords and terrorists still being harbored in the United States that Russia has long been upset about that the U.S. won't extradite. So it wasn't meant to be a serious offer. This is what they're not getting.
Right.
It was Sarah Huckabee Sanders even said it was sincere. No, it was not sincere. It was
rhetorical.
Of course, it was rhetorical. It was meant to highlight the absurdity of the U.S. demand that these Russian military intelligence agents be shipped to them.
Right.
And I have to think that the people in the Kremlin have to be a little bit of despairing at this point, when such obvious political signaling is completely reported and misinterpreted by so many people who claim to be Russia agents, and we must assume many figures in the government, because that's who they get their information and their ideas from. I think you know, the Kremlin's kind of got to be face-palming itself here, saying, do we have to come out and spell it for you? We're trying to make a point about the equivalence here and what you're suggesting, and you can't, I don't know whether you can't accept it or you don't understand what we were trying to point out here.
It's almost like it's over their heads because it's so...
Yeah, it is. You know, it is. And that's really... It's really sad. It's really it's really sad, and it shows how far... relations. Now, I have heard one good piece of evidence. There's been all kinds of rumors that Putin suggested a second Donbass referendum as a way of solving that. There's no definitive on how real this was or not. There's suggestions that Trump invited Putin to the White House, which in the current political climate, I do not think is a good idea. It's probably not even safe for the Russian president.
Right.
There were some other things that were evidently discussed, and there's of course lots of discussions over what Trump has or Putin has over Trump, whatever PP tapes or whatever the dodgy dossier mill is feeding here. But I did hear the first bit of positive news out of this summit, and I don't think there was really any that they have at least begun closed door meetings between Russia and the U.S. on the initial discussions about crafting successors to the New START and the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty, which is at the top of the list of the many type of such treaties that should obviously include cyber warfare, hypersonic weapons, machine learning, and artificial intelligence, and military use, and so on. The serious stuff that needs to be addressed by these two countries. Of course, we can't even dream, I guess, of them actually sitting down and addressing climate change with Trump's opinion on it. There are so many things in this world that, of course, many of these things do require more than the U.S. and Russia. They also, have to include China, the EU, India, the other major great powers.
Right.
But this is probably the most conflictual relationship right here that exists between any country other than perhaps India and Pakistan.
Right.
And it has to be worked out. They have to, at least be able to cooperate on these basic issues that are necessary for the citizens of both countries' survival, like the a New START treaty and a new INF treaty, you know, with the risk of nuclear oblivion, which is still very real. The Bulletin of Atomic Scientists has the clock at some 2 minutes to midnight, which it has not been since the late 1950s, as far as I know.
Even during the Cuban Missile Crisis, it's like it's closer than that, according to, I don't know about whether it's that group of scientists, but I know that the Stephen Cohen and some other experts believe that for sure. You know, so what we get back, meanwhile, well, we're closing in on the last 4 minutes or so. We get back from this, you know, attempt by, you know, which you know, I saw it. Just anybody that, you know, that's past the age of 14 should see Russia saying, hey, look, you know, you want to come in here and start interviewing our, you know, intelligence people and everything else with these baloney accusations. You have sent some guys here that have done some bad stuff. Let's talk to them, like the guy that's got $1 billion. What we get out of the U.S., 98-0 Senate resolution. They can't even vote themselves a raise that unanimously because, you know, McCain is on his deathbed and I don't know who else was missing, but 98-0. This is crafted by Chuck Schumer and the Republican majority leader allowed this to be voted on, drafted by Schumer. It's the sense of Congress that the United States should refuse to make available any current or former diplomat, civil servant, political appointee, law enforcement official, or member of the armed force of the United States for questioning by the government of Vladimir Putin, period. And it means nothing. It's essentially the Congress resolution, but they're unanimous about it.
I realize it's a political statement. I actually don't have a problem with that. Russia wouldn't allow that. And that's the whole point of what they did,
right,
by pointing out people who have meddled in Russian politics.
Right.
You know, again, the U.S. refuses to acknowledge that they have done this.
Right.
Right. That they have interfered not only in Russia's politics, but interfered in countries around the world.
Oh, yeah.
You know, people say, oh, one bad thing does not justify another. Well, you know, the world doesn't deal in moral high ground. The world deals in an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. And anyone who can't realize the realist nature of that, you know, needs to question that, by the way.
You know, not even just that, by the way. On the one hand, this one is accusing somebody of, you know, scratching someone else's neck. And you turn around and say the person making the accusation is Jack the Ripper.
Yeah.
You know, you've strangled 20 people or whatever. You're talking about somebody scratching somebody's neck.
So, it's unfortunately at the point where we can't even have an adult conversation between the two countries anymore. Michael Hayden, who was the director of the National Security Agency and the CIA, in a speech to the Heritage Foundation said last year, unfortunately, he calls what he claims that Russia did with the hacking of the DNC honorable. He says, unfortunately, I have to call that honorable state espionage. He says hacking the major political parties in a major foreign adversary. He said, game on.
Right.
That's what we do.
Right.
And then he said, I would hate to have to testify before Congress that I never did anything like that as head of the National Security Agency.
Yep. And, you know, we've got to close on this, but I saw people suggesting that the way to have a private conversation between heads of state would be on the telephone. And all I could think of is Angela Merkel and Dilma Rousseff's telephone having been bugged and caught being bugged by the Obama administration. So, Mark, it gets curiouser and curiouser. We'll talk about it some more next week as things develop.
Great. Thanks for having me, Don.
Thanks for being with us.
Hang in there, guys.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.